We are, excuse me there, and we are live on Blog Talk Radio for Sports Club. Welcome in. I'm your host, Jeremy the Impact York. I do believe Cody will be joining us shortly. We have got a lot, and I mean a lot, to go into. Hope everybody is having a good, stupendous week. Been pretty good around here, I believe. A lot of storms, a lot of weather. But it seems that everything's on the up and up. Of course, once again, thanks to Blog Talk Radio and Impact Media for allowing us to come on each and every week to do Sports Club. For those who have asked, no, we did not do a board check show last night. We're going to take a couple weeks off with that one. There's, you know, everybody's in downtime with the NHL and the ECHL and AHL and such. We'll be back in a couple weeks for that. Game plan, our college show, will be season debut pretty soon. Lots of fun stuff going on there. Georgia State looks like they are ready and primed to go. We'll mainly be focusing on them, but we'll also talk. We'll talk all the big dogs as well on college. Plus, we'll have some fun guests. I think you guys will really get into. Like I said, tons we're gonna get into. Got some NFL, got some baseball. I know Cody's gonna be happy to talk baseball. And lots of other stuff we want to get into. But first, I want to start with Atlanta United. And the reason I want to start with Atlanta United is it's bugging me. Not saying that Atlanta United is terrible, because they're not. They're still top of the league. They're still unbeaten in like the last 12 games or so. Something along those lines. It's that they're leaving points on the field. And the way you do that in soccer is you're not winning when you should or when you have the capability to. And sure, they had a 2-2 draw against Toronto FC, who has some talent. I'm not saying they're bad. Toronto's not bad. They're one of the more decent teams, but for the sake of not counting, even though we will, obviously it counts, but for the sake of not trying to remember how much stoppage time there was. For 88 of the 90 minutes, Atlanta United completely dominated Toronto. What Toronto likes to do is kind of what Atlanta United does. They like to play fast up front, create a lot of chaos when they can, which leads to goals ultimately. And they like to dominate the possession game for the ball. Well, that's pretty much what Atlanta United did. They kept possession for majority of the time, wouldn't let Toronto really have a lot of say here and there and do some other stuff. Except for a goal right before halftime. And then the second goal towards the end. Goals that were good goals. These weren't crap goals. These weren't Guzan fell down or LGP knocked it into his own goal. No, we don't do that. These were, we should have won this 2-0 or 2-1. These kind of goals. Just goals that on any other day are not even going to be attempted. But Toronto saw some opportunity, so they took it. So congratulations, Toronto, on the draw. Martinez had both goals for Atlanta United. Stop me when you heard that before. Some things about the game. There was a red card at the end of the game where Chris Mavinga, who has a history of not necessarily always being the most level-headed guy, he's just coming off of suspension. He gets the red card he basically rabbit punched LGP. And LGP, I'm not going to say embellished, he played it up a little bit. Well, it's still a rabbit punch to the eye region, which is just uncalled for. There's no reason why you should swing your fist in soccer unless you are celebrating. You know, maybe the Tiger fist pump. But no, he There was, I don't know, it involved Almiron of some kind. Somebody said he spit towards their other team. I think he just said a word they didn't necessarily like. It was towards the very end of the game. So it just become this crazy, I don't know, almost like pro wrestling, where they make it look like they're going to fight, but they all just keep getting in between them. And then out of nowhere, Mavinga threw the punch. I say it's a punch. People could say it was a shove. It was whatever. That's fine. But, no, there's no sense in that. It's just despicable. So he gets a red card at the end of the game, which it's the end of the game. He's already going he's going to go to the locker room anyway. But that means he's going to miss the next game, and they need him. So, you know, congratulations, Chris Mavinga, for being an idiot, getting the red card award for being an idiot, and enjoy another game off because, you know, might as well make the most of it, right? But Atlanta is still in a funk, and they're not closing out games when I feel like they should be. Now, once again, still top of the league, still, besides losing a defender a week, it seems like, on the back line, besides those things, I don't really have I don't have much of a problem with the way they're playing, or that they're getting results. Sure, they're getting results, they're not really losing a whole lot, my issue is that they're not closing these games out. That's the best way I can put it. They're just not closing these games out. Martinez is doing everything he can, but he's scoring 85% of the goals. Who's the secondary scorer here? Last year when he went down, Almiron took over the main goal share, goal load. And Villalba was able to kind of make up on the back end. Well, there's not really a secondary scorer. Guzan's doing everything he can. It's not even mistakes that they're giving up these goals. These are just good opportunities. It's hard to say, I don't know why you can't play hard for 90 minutes. They are playing hard for 90 minutes, but you could dominate for 88, and in the two that you didn't, this could happen. But that's also how Atlanta United's scoring. So they're still in this funk. I would like them to get into a better one. I'd get out of this funk and get into a better groove. A little more like they were to start the season, but they started off so gangbusters that it's just kind of hard. It's just kind of hard. You can't just flip them. Can't just flip the proverbial switch, you know? You just can't flip a switch and start suddenly playing like you were at the beginning of the season. I think a lot of it, you know, I think maybe what we're discounting this whole time is we're missing a handful of people. There's a reason why we have a, 18, 19-year-old that could potentially, and George Bello, who could potentially start. It's a reason why we keep calling these guys up. It's not just because they're good. We're getting injuries. But the main thing to me, if you think about it, the difference between the beginning of the year for Atlanta United and the way they're playing now, this funk kind of started when Garza went down. If you go back and look at about the time Garza went down, that's pretty much when all this started. Now, in any way, is it his fault? No. In any way, do I think that's what it is, that's bugging him, that he's not on the field? It is bugging him, but it's not affecting their play. It just, for some weird reason, the way the stars align, you know, sometimes they line up where we can see Venus. Sometimes they line up where we can see Jupiter, Saturn. And we can see all kinds of excuse me there. You know, just the way things align. So I think Atlanta United will get out of this funk at some point. I feel like Garza, who is slowly getting back on the field, will be back sometime soon. And, you know, no need to worry because Atlanta United is still leading everything. But without further ado, I want to bring on the Superman, Cody Elias. How you doing, Cody?
Jeremy, good to see you. How are you?
Doing pretty good, except for whatever is apparently choking me up today, and I'm pretty sure it wasn't the subject matter because Atlanta United is a fun watch and I'm passionate about the team, but they don't really choke me up about that. It must be something in the room.
I would say, unfortunately, I wasn't on, or you could have used the cough button, but that's on me for calling in late.
Oh, no, that's fine. It actually worked out. You know, the usual kinks to our show we had to work out. Plus, you know, we all do things before we get here each show. So I'm not worried about that kind of stuff. No, but I was finishing up Atlanta United there. They get the 2-2 draw with Toronto FC. And then, if I'm not mistaken, they don't play again till the 19th. So they get about a 2-week break. But in that 2-week break, I guess that means we can talk baseball. I know that makes you happy.
Yeah, a lot of stuff going on in baseball right now. So it's kind of exciting. You got the Braves in a series. Well, they were in a series against the Nationals. Juan Soto, Ronald Acuna Jr., that was a fun watch. You know, now that that's, you know, kind of over, the Braves taking 2-3 from a series that the Nationals really needed to get back in the NL East race. Those two guys are going to be fun to watch for years to come. It was an exciting time for baseball, even though Soto got thrown out of the game last night for arguing balls and strikes, pretty much. But there's a lot going on. My Pirates are actually here in San Francisco to take on the Giants in a 4-game series. They're actually retiring Barry Bonds' jersey, which is funny because Bonds will be the first Giant in the history of the franchise to have his jersey retired and not be in the Hall of Fame. The other 10 guys that have had their jerseys retired are in the Hall of Fame. So maybe the Giants know that Bonds is probably never going to get in the Hall of Fame, and they're doing this for him because, like I said, you know, everyone else, like Willie Mays, Willie McCovey, Juan Marichal, Mel Ott, you know, and others that are in the Hall, that also have their jersey retired are in the Hall. So going to be a fun weekend this weekend. Everyone knows I'm not a Bonds fan because of what happened in 1992 with Sid Bream and the Braves. Even though I was only 3 years old, it doesn't matter. The Pirates were terrible for years while Bonds was, you know, hitting, you know, 40 home runs every year, which is funny. If you look up his career numbers, Bonds broke 50 home runs only once in his career, and it was the year he hit 73 home runs. So pretty crazy how good he was, home run hitting, 500 career steals if you to go along with the 760 home runs. So nice career for Bonds. You know, great to have him have his jersey retired for a Giants fan. But for someone like me, I'll probably be booing at the game on Saturday.
Well, you know, I guess I'll make the positive comment, and then I'll the offhanded joke, and I'll set it up that way. Maybe those other San Francisco or maybe those other Giant Hall of Famers can kind of step up to bat for Barry and maybe try to finagle something that way. Potentially that might help him is some of those guys, the ones that are still around, obviously, going to bat for him. But you know, if all else fails, after he has this ceremony this weekend, I hear UT Chattanooga is a pretty good venue for Hall of Fame speeches.
Yeah, I saw, I didn't watch any of the TO Hall of Fame speech. I read some of the stuff, but I listened to his speech about why he decided not to be at the Hall of Fame. But, you know, if you have guys like Willie Mays and Willie McCovey, you know, I know they're older now. Although Willie McCovey at the age of 80 just got remarried to, I think, a woman that's like, she looks like she's 40. They're both going to be there on, look it up when you get a chance. It's pretty crazy, but they're both going to be there on Saturday along with a bunch of other former Giants legends. So even the great Bobby Bonilla will be there. You're a Mets fan. He's still stealing money from the Mets. He's going to be there.
I can't say he's stealing it. That might be one of the greatest contracts ever negotiated, and for some stupid reason, my Mets went along with it.
Well, you just said it right there. It's the Mets. Although, you know, speaking of the Mets, Jacob DeGrom, if I had a vote for Cy Young, he'd be the Cy Young winner, even if you take a look at his win-loss record, because people still do that for some strange reason. They still evaluate how pitcher does on his win-losses when his team is absolutely terrible. I think DeGrom would be the Cy Young. And I listen to the Baseball Tonight podcast every day on my way home from work, and Buster Olney's on occasion. So Keith Law, the senior MLB writer at Scott for ESPN, has been doing it, and he said that he believes DeGrom would get if he had a vote, DeGrom would get his vote for NL MVP. So that's pretty high praise for a guy that's, you know, playing for a team that's the Mets are like 20 games under 500, but that just shows you how well he's pitched on a team that's been really bad.
Yeah, I mean, they're not the Orioles, who are, I think, don't even have 45 wins, and then you have the Red Sox, who are 45 games over 500. After sweeping the Yankees. I'll get into those two in a minute. But, you know, speaking of the Mets, there's a team that is trying to impersonate them right now, and they're doing a pretty good job. Any guess who is trying to tank this early in the season?
In baseball or?
Yes, yes.
Well, every team, half the teams in the American League stink. So you got that.
well, this is I'll give you a couple clues. This is a National League team who had a lot of promise and for a while was riding pretty high, and includes, I believe you're a big fan of their big star too, but he's definitely one of my favorites. You got to see him close up as he put as many balls as he can into the atmosphere at the All-Star game.
Oh, are you talking about the Nats?
Yeah, they're starting to do their best Mets impression of get a real big lead, and then right before September, let's see how many times we can blow games.
Yeah, they've been underperforming all year. Besides Max Scherzer, their pitching staff has been terrible. Strasburg's been hurt a lot. Harper was so good the first month of the season, first 2 months of the season, and then June and, you know, mid-May through June, he was absolutely terrible. Even July up until the All-Star break, he's been playing a lot better now. The only guy on their team that's been consistent besides Scherzer has probably been Juan Soto, their 19-year-old phenom. Other than that, they haven't had a lot. You know, there's been reports of clubhouse drama. You know, Dave Martinez doesn't have a grasp on the clubhouse. A lot of dysfunction. You know, they probably should have been sellers at the trade deadline. You could have got a lot for Bryce Harper, but you know, that's something they should have done. But then again, the Mets should have traded Jacob DeGrom and Noah Syndergaard and got a King's ransom for both of those guys, and they didn't do that. So, unfortunately, another year of mediocrity for the Nationals is probably coming, where they won't get out of the first round of the playoffs if they even make the playoffs. And then for the Mets, another year of not making the playoffs. But the Mets have if I had to compare the two futures of the teams, I think the Nats might be trending down, especially if they lose Harper. But if they keep Harper, I think that, you know, they might be able to compete because they have another good prospect in Victor Robles. He's actually, if Juan Soto didn't get hurt, Robles would have been the guy that took Soto's spot. But since Robles got hurt, he's out for the year. Soto got the call at 19, and he's been impressive. And then with the Mets, they've, you know, guys they've been counting on, like Michael Conforto, and, you know, Cespedes is going to be out for probably, you know, up until next year. Brandon Nimmo started out well, but now he's kind of struggling. So the Mets have a lot of question marks. And I mean, I like their manager, but I've read that they think that he could get run out after year one, which is just crazy.
Yeah, that's just the Mets in general. I think that's just more par for the course as far as that. But I don't want to spend too much more time on a bottom feeding team currently. Real quickly, somebody had asked me, because they know that I pulled for the Yankees a little bit too, thanks to my mom, kind of turned me into a Yankees fan when I was younger. They want to know if I thought the Yankees could hang with the Red Sox. I think we just saw that series, what, over the weekend or whatever, to prove that not anytime soon, especially with the injury to Judge. Wrist injury is so crazy anyway. But, here's the other thing about the Red Sox. You might want to slow your roll a little bit there, Boston, because whoever wins the most games in Major League Baseball during the regular season, it usually doesn't go so well. It's like they almost run out of gas before you get to a World Series or something. I mean, obviously, Seattle's the big example years ago, but it seems like every year the team that comes in with the most wins is like maybe the third or fourth team, like, overall in the playoffs. They never seem to make a World Series run.
Well, the crazy thing to think about the Red Sox is they have 81 wins, and they're one of – I can't remember what the statistic was, but, like, they're one of, I think, six American League teams that have 81 wins, and the team starts 115 games. And all those teams prior have reached the World Series except for one, and that was the 2001 Mariners, who set the wins record. I think Boston could possibly set they could possibly challenge for that all-time wins record. The record's 116, the Cubs from like 1906 or something, and the 2001 Mariners tie the record at 116 wins, but I think that's something that's a reasonable goal for them, which is just crazy because they're playing so well. They swept the Yankees in that four-game series, and then they've been playing – I think they just played Toronto this last series. The only team that I've watched that had a lot of success against them is the other team that's playing really well in the American League is the A's. And the A's, you know, put up a good series against them. And you're right, though. you're right about the record. That sometimes comes back to bite teams, but this Boston team is special with Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez, and Mitch Moreland was an all-star playing first base, and their pitching staff has done so well. And, you know, they have a first-year manager in Alex Cora, who is, you know, he's been pushing all the right buttons, and you could say, you know, he's probably AL manager of the year for what he's doing. I always will argue against that because he's managing the Red Sox and they can spend all the money. Personally, I think manager of the year is Bob Melvin. I'm not playing any bias as an A's fan, but what Bob's done with the A's this year when they weren't supposed to compete is pretty impressive. So, but you're right about the Red Sox. I could see them with the whole record thing getting, you know, being the third or fourth best team in the playoffs, but I just think this team is a little different this year, and I think that they could be a team that probably wins the pennant and goes to the World Series. But Houston's going to be tough. Houston is getting a lot of their players back this week. Correa is back this weekend. I think Altuve will be back soon, and then Springer got hurt, but he'll be back probably in September. So I'd love to see an AL standings between Boston and Houston as someone that roots for Houston because of the rebuild. And the book Astro Ball is fantastic. If people want to read that book is so well done, detailing how they pretty much tanked for years. And then they built their team for the draft, which is great. And then, you know, now there's stuff surrounding them with the whole Roberto Ozuna trade, which I don't really want to get into any light DV talk, as we say in San Francisco when we go on the show. But that whole thing surrounding that, it's kind of I hope that it doesn't destroy the clubhouse chemistry. But if you had to pick a team right now to beat in the AL, it's clearly Boston. And then I put Oakland right behind them. But yeah, Boston. I'm hoping to see them challenge that win record because that was so cool. You know, in 2001, mm-hmm. Ichiro's rookie year, we also won the MVP where they went on that crazy run, set the wins record, and then lost the first round of the playoffs to the Yankees.
Yeah, definitely the American League, I think, is the better of the two as far as going into it. Because like you said, the Red Sox are obviously probably going to be the one seed. I think the A's will probably be the two seed. You got Houston in the mix. And then you can't forget about the Cleveland Indians. This might be a more talented, better roster than when they made the World Series against the Cubs, 2 years ago. They're absolutely loaded. They're getting healthy at the right times, and nobody's paying attention to them. They're kind of like this year's Houston.
Well, the thing with the Indians that hurts them is they play in the American League Central, where the other three teams behind them are absolutely – they're the biggest jokes in baseball. The Royals stink. The White Sox stink, and the Twins are actually – they have a below 500 record, but they've been so streaky this year where you never know them. But they're not 40 games under 500 like the Royals and White Sox are, who are clearly tanking. But
right. You're
right, those people are sleeping on Cleveland. They have a great pitching staff. Corey Kluber is great. Trevor Bauer has been awesome this year. Lindor is a great shortstop. Jose Ramirez is having the best season that no one's talking about because, well – he's Jose Ramirez. He plays in Cleveland, and everyone's talking about Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez. But I think Cleveland will end up being the three because the A's have to catch Houston still, which it could still happen. But it'd be Boston, Houston, Cleveland, and then you'd have the Yankees and probably the A's. I think the A's could catch the Yankees for the first wild card and host the game. But boy, an A's Yankees wild card game would be pretty cool in New York because the A's. Have had that problem of getting past the Yankees, and this could be the year they finally do it. And it'd just be so fitting that they did it this year, a year after they traded Sonny Gray to the Yankees, and Sonny's now pitching out of the bullpen. So that'd be a great story to watch when October comes around. That's my favorite time of the year besides the NHL playoffs, because the NHL playoffs, are there's mm-hmm. nothing like it, because literally anyone can win, because you never know with any of those teams. Like, it's always the best one, eight seeds. Like when the Kings won a few years ago as the eighth seed, it's always great to watch.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree. Except for I would have the NHL playoffs as number one, no matter what. I actually had a rant earlier today with somebody about how beautiful hockey can be, at least live. But, yeah, I definitely agree, though. Baseball playoffs are always unpredictable, too. I do want to talk about the A's a little bit because it's one of those ever so often the A's would suddenly have a season like this where they compete. But I feel like they've built this team to where they are kind of the new Houston, as far as they're a bunch of guys that a lot of people have never heard of. They don't have anybody that you would probably try to give a 10-year contract to, which they're just absurd to ever give anybody a 10-year contract. I mean, not to be left out. If my boss wanted to give me one, I would sign it. But it's the A's are doing it with a bunch of people that most casual fans have no idea who they are. Like, if you weren't in the Bay Area, even being a big baseball fan, you'd probably only know about a third of the roster, right?
Well, I mean, it's hard for me because I'm an A's fan, and it's biased. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to answer that question. But you're right, though. No one knows. The Ringer wrote a great article earlier this year about Matt Chapman, the A's third baseman, who's probably going to win the AL Gold Glove at third. Nolan Arenado, the best defensive third baseman in baseball, said that he thinks Chapman's better than him. They were high school teammates, which is crazy to think that they were teammates in high school, and they're both, you know, studs defensively and now in the majors. But you got Chapman, who does a lot of things defensively great. He's hitting, you know, right around 270, which he's having a nice year. And then you have Chris Davis, who, or as we call him here, Crush Davis, who has, I think, yes. I believe he has 32 home runs. He has the most home runs in baseball over the last, like, 2.5 years. But no one knows that because he plays in Oakland. He's on pace to have his third straight 40 home run season, which he'd be only the second ace since, I think, Jimmy Fox to have three straight 40 home run seasons. And Jimmy Fox is a Hall of Famer, and Chris Davis is nowhere near a Hall of Famer because he can't throw and he doesn't play. He's a straight DH now. But Chris Davis is awesome, but no one knows who he is because he plays in Oakland and they do a bad job of marketing their players, but they have that reputation of they let guys go after so many years and they can't afford it, and you know, they're going through a whole stadium dilemma right now where they had a spot picked out and it fell through. They're coming up with new and creative ways to try to get people to come to the ballpark, but that's where it starts. You have to get people to go to the ballpark, and they're not getting a lot of people. I mean, they had 32,000 people there last night to see the Dodgers, which is great, but, you know, there's a lot of Dodger fans there, so that kind of skews that number a little bit. But the rest of the guys on the team, you know, you have Matt Olson's a nice young player. Steven Piscotty, a lot of people know who he is because of the story about his mom and the Cardinals and A's working out the trade where he came home because he's from Pleasanton, which is, you know, about 30 minutes from me, and it's over in the East Bay. And then you have their pitching staff, besides Sean Manaea, like, you know, who isn't really a household name, you have guys like Edwin Jackson and Trevor Cahill, who are guys that have been established in baseball, but they're in their 30s, and you never think there's people that you would think would be pitching on a team that's doing so well, and they get Mike Fiers, which is great. But what the A's are doing that's really helping them is they're building through their bullpen, and the idea of bullpenning, which the Dodgers championed last year, and Houston's done it too, and the Indians, you see the Indians do too, where you have your starters go so many innings, and you bring your bullpen in to close out the game. The Royals kind of started this a couple of years ago when they went to the World Series and lost, and then they won. The Dodgers did it last year, and then the A's are doing it this year because they have four guys that are lights out. They have Familia, the former Mets closer. Lou Trevino's great. He's a guy that came out of nowhere this year. And then Blake Treinen, their closer, throws a 99-mile-per-hour sinker, which is just ridiculous. They have three guys right there that if you go six, you know, good luck scoring runs 7, 8, 9. But that's the problem. They have to get these guys to go at least six innings, and they've had problems with that. And when you said about the Houston thing, I kind of see where you're coming from, but I disagree a little bit because Houston has guys like Correa and Springer and Altuve. Well, Correa and Springer were first-round draft picks, so they had a lot of praise on them. Correa was the number one overall pick. But you're right, though. Like, Houston kind of came out of nowhere. They were terrible for years. They lost over 100 games 3 years in a row. People in Houston just gave up on them. Then they came out of nowhere, and they made the playoffs in 2015. They missed it in 2016. And then last year they were playing well, and they struggled in August, and then they got Verlander, and that turned their whole season around. And now they have the best pitching staff in baseball, probably 1 through 5, although McCullers is now in the DL. But good luck going up against Verlander, Cole, Morton, and Keuchel in the playoffs. That's a really good 1 through 4 right there. Then, you know, hopefully you get McCullers back, but you don't really use five starters in the playoffs. So, as you saw last year, he came out of the bullpen for them. So, it's gonna be cool to watch, and I like the similarities. And they're both competing for the AL West title. So this last month and a half is going to be really exciting if you're a baseball fan.
Yeah, and as I'm looking over the roster, I actually, not just because I listen to you guys over there, at least the podcast form of you guys over in the Bay Area, but I know a lot more of these people than I thought I did. You mentioned a lot of them, but didn't know Brett Anderson was out there. Is it Mike Fiers? Is that how you say that? I've never known how to say his name.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. He made his debut last night against the Dodgers and pitched really well. 5 1/3, one run, 8 strikeouts. So He's got.
Yeah, he's. I mean,
one,
he's sneaky, solid, good. I mean, he's one of those that you may not remember his name, but if you're at the ballpark, you know you're going to see a solid game.
Yeah, and he won a World Series last year. He didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember.
He
won a World Series last year with Houston, and then this is his first year with Detroit.
Yeah.
He pitched a no-hitter a couple years ago against the Dodgers when he was with Houston. The guy was a little down last year, but he's been a pretty consistent hitter. And most people probably remember him he's the guy that hit Giancarlo Stanton in the face with that fastball when Stanton, broke his jaw. That was the guy that did that. So that's another intriguing storyline when it comes to the playoffs. If you want to see the A's and Yankees, is you have Stanton and Fires going out in the playoffs. Could be another, I wouldn't say it's going to be Clemens Piazza-esque, but it'll be really good to watch if those two guys match up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could go through, I could see Lou Trevino and some of these other guys that I've just become fans, and a lot of people forget Lou Croy out there. I mean, I'm not going to go all the way up and down the roster, but this A's team is something special, and I'm glad not just for people like you that are diehard A's fans and people in the Bay Area, but baseball needs these Houstons, these Oaklands, the non-traditional. As much as I cheer for the New York teams and the Boston, the LAs, and that kind of stuff, it's fun when the other markets finally get that shot and they run with it.
Well, I completely agree. As a lifelong Pirate fan, I mean, Oakland and Pittsburgh are both small market teams, and it sucks because the Pirates always have to go up against the Cubs and Cardinals every year, and I don't expect them to win a World Series, but they've had their runs, and they're playing better this year. And you're right, though. I think based on these parity, I don't really care to see Yankees, Dodgers in the World Series, or even the Giants. I mean, I don't hate the Giants, but I'm just not a Giants fan, so I don't care to see Giants, Yankees, or Giants, Red Sox.
Right.
That's why every year when the Giants won the World Series, it was cool because it was Giants, Texas, Giants, Giants, Detroit, and then they played Kansas City when they won their third World Series in 2014. And then the Royals won the World Series the next year. It's always someone different. You haven't seen Boston or the Yankees in the World Series in, quite some time now. So I think 2012 or 2013 is the last time Boston went when they won. So it had to be 2013, if I'm not mistaken, is when Boston last won the World Series. It's been good. The baseball's getting a little more parity, but when it comes down to it, it's always going to be, you're going to see a lot of big market teams in the World Series or getting to the World Series.
Sure.
Last year was cool because Houston made it. And if people don't think that, know this, like, if you don't know off the top of your head, but, like, Houston's a top five market media-wise. Like, Houston just keeps growing, and it's going to end up they were saying, I remember looking at something, they were saying that Houston eventually is going to surpass Chicago as the third largest city in the United States.
Oh, I believe it. Yeah, that place is just getting bigger and bigger. And this just in, Browns fans, if you're watching the only game televised in this general area, your Browns just scored. It may not happen a whole lot, although I think it will. But they're about to be up 7-3 against the Giants. So there's hope in Cleveland.
Baker Mayfield? Was it Baker Mayfield?
No, it was Tyrod Taylor, who threw a
still playing with 3 minutes left in the.
A Peyton Manning-like pass that wobbled like a duck over the shoulder and. Not sure. It wasn't Corey Coleman. We know that much. Not sure who caught that. Njoku. Oh, it's about time he caught something since he caught absolute squat once I added him to my fantasy team last year.
He was good to start the year. Then, yeah, you're right. He kind of just didn't do anything the rest of the year. But that's because they had bad – I mean, Deshaun Kizer did not look good last year for them.
No. But I guess that's the best transition into football we could get into without – just doing a cold open, I guess, but lots of stuff to talk about in football right now. And it preseason's preseason, once again, at this point, everybody's at 0-0. Everybody technically, mathematically has a chance to win the Super Bowl, but there's actually only, I had a master list. There's only a handful of teams who can actually win the Super Bowl this year, at least in my opinion. And I'm sure you would probably agree with most of these, but we're going to kind of go through them real quick if the page will ever load. But, I mean, it's obvious. Even though the Patriots are down a little bit, the Patriots are a front runner to potentially be in the Super Bowl. Can we agree there?
No, I disagree. Of course I agree.
But, yeah, we'll go alphabetical since that's the way that it is on here. I would say the Atlanta Falcons, and you can just say agree or disagree, and then we'll go through if I miss any. I would say the Atlanta Falcons have a chance to be in the Super Bowl this year and to win it.
I disagree with that one.
Okay.
I think that division is going to be tough. I like New Orleans in that division this year. I think that New Orleans, with their defense, sorry, Falcons fans, I just think that – I don't know what's going on with that Falcons team with – I think that they peaked. They might have kind of peaked when they had Kyle Shanahan. That year they were scoring 34 points a game, which Shanahan is impressive. And, you know, Sark's in his second year, so we'll see what he does with the offense. But I like New Orleans, and Carolina's going to be better this year. And, well, Tampa Bay's not going to be any good, so there's that.
Yeah, but I don't know. Atlanta is one of those – they're in that weird limbo where they're like – they're clearly a playoff team, and they're clearly good enough to win their division. But, yeah, they have a legitimate shot at a wild card as well because New Orleans is just – they might be that team.
Well, it's funny. We'll see. It's funny about the Falcons. A few years ago, I actually picked the Falcons to not be that good, and they ended up going to the Super Bowl. So, what do I know?
So, you're saying they're going to go 0-16 this year then so that Falcons fans have hope?
Yeah, we can put it down there. Matt Ryan probably have the worst year of his career. Julio Jones is going to sit out halfway through the season because he wants more money again. You know, things like that.
Yeah, that'll probably work. But so far, we agree on New England. We disagree on Atlanta, but I can see the argument either way there. But like I said, this is a list of teams that have the ability to win the Super Bowl. If they make it to the Super Bowl, no matter who they're matched up against, they have that ability. Because I agree, I think New Orleans is going to win the division. But I think if the Falcons do find themselves in a Super Bowl, they have as good a chance as almost anybody to win it. That's kind of my logic there.
As long as they're not playing the Patriots. Too soon?
Not for me. Haven't even gotten my team. Right. But my team did make this list. So, in fact, my team would be the next one up. I think... And I will get to a lot more reasoning why a bit later with a different
disagree.
Thing. I'm going to say the Dallas Cowboys have a chance. They are probably on the absolute bottom of the list. If it's 8 or 10 teams that I end up with here, Dallas is probably the least of all those as far as everything. But they really don't have a whole lot of bad stuff going. It's just there's not as many A-pluses as usual.
My only question is, who is Dak throwing the ball to?
Cole Beasley.
I mean, Cole Beasley. I mean, he's good.
As every time he scores a touchdown, he's going to write a new verse for a new upcoming track on his second album.
Well, we'll find out tonight. The Cowboys play my team, the 49ers, so we'll see. Jimmy G versus Dak, which is a good thing. Let me ask you this real quick. Who has more expectations here, Dak or Jimmy G?
Oh, Jimmy G does. Dak is settling into knowing that he is a B-plus quarterback, that he had potential to be an A-minus, but he's a B-plus quarterback. He can say what he wants, as he's done in the last few weeks about his anthem stance and such like that, and he is practically already a member of the Jones family because the entire family would adopt him at this point. So he can really do no wrong. Jimmy G, every time he turns around, the public perception is, and I'll get to it. Well, we'll get into it in a minute. But it's one of those that the 49ers have been wanting to get back into the mix ever since, you know, really before Jeff Garcia, ever since basically Steve Young left town. They've been wanting to get back into that, and they just haven't been able to nail down the right combination of coaches and the right combination of quarterbacks to get them anywhere close. Now, you could argue, and I would give you that point, the Alex Smith, Harbaugh years.
Jim Harbaugh,
okay,
yeah.
That was a good mix. I enjoyed that mix, and that was a really good squad there, but management screwed that up and ran them both out of town.
Well, actually, when that happened, they didn't even get to the Super Bowl with Alex Smith. They got to the Super Bowl with Colin Kaepernick. So they ran Alex out, and they had Cap. You know, we had Cap for a couple of years, and Cap was great. And then defenses figured him out, and Cap was out of the league. The Niners went through 3 coaches in 3 years, and here we are, Shanahan, and the Jimmy Garoppolo era is going to start as a full-time starter starting week one in Minnesota. I mean, good luck. I mean, good luck week one against Minnesota at, you know, at U.S. Bank Stadium with Kirk Cousins now playing quarterback. You don't have Case Keenum doing that, you know, leading that team, or you have a guy that's a little bit, I'd say he's a little bit better than Case Keenum. No offense to Case Keenum. I think Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback. He just played on an inept Redskins team. They were, those guys, I don't think those guys kind of cared. And I like Jay Gruden. I think Jay Gruden's a great play caller. And I just didn't think Washington really helped out Kirk Cousins. And Cousins could have, you know, he was turnover happy a little bit towards the end. But I think he's a good quarterback. And I think he's going to do great things in Minnesota. I think that's exactly what they needed. They needed a quarterback. So not to go off on a huge thing here, but the 49ers, you know, the schedule to start out is kind of tough. Then they play Detroit. And so you can look at their first four games, it can end up being 1-3, especially after that opener against Minnesota.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And the thing that doesn't help Washington, because I agree, I like Jay Gruden, and I'm going to bring up a topic about him in a second. But he's just in a rough division to try to turn that around. I mean, the Cowboys are, you know, like I said, right there at that B level, you got the defending champion Eagles who aren't going anywhere for a while. And then every time they turn around, you have the most consistently boring, but yet they win a lot of games, New York Giants. So, I mean, it's like being in the NFC South if you're like Tampa Bay. You're looking at three perennial playoff teams every year, and it's just hard to get out of the bottom of that.
I agree. And here's the Niners' schedule. They're at Minnesota, home against Detroit. Then they play at Kansas City, home against L.A., the Chargers, at Arizona, and then they play at Green Bay on Monday night, and they come home to play the Rams on Sunday Night Football. So their first, their first seven games, their first seven games, I mean, good luck. And then the schedule kind of eases up. They play Arizona, and they play Oakland and the Giants, and then they have their bye.
Well,
but,
of those first seven games or whatever, how many wins do you see right off the top of your head?
Well, they'll beat Detroit. I think they'll beat Arizona. I think they can beat the Chargers. The Chiefs are interesting because of the whole Patrick Mahomes angle and him being the starter this year. But I like him. And then they got rid of Marcus Peters, so that's going to be an interesting dynamic how their defense is. But the Green Bay game will be interesting. I don't think they'll beat the Rams. I don't think they'll beat Minnesota. I wish they would, but the start of the year 1-0 would be great. I mean, the hype on Jimmy G would be so. If you thought 5-0 Jimmy G was bad, wait till Jimmy G 1-0 after beating Minnesota, who's like a favorite to go to the Super Bowl. Good Lord! I mean, as a 49er fan and a guy that wants to see them do very well this year, and you know, I'm on the Jimmy G hype train. I mean, the hype train might derail if they win that first game.
Well, I have to tell you a box note here in a minute because it just come across my phone and it's pretty funny. I got to give them props on this. It may be the most exciting thing to happen to the Hawks this year. Back to our list of teams. Only if their quarterback stays 100% healthy, because you just can't take them out of the mix. If not, you got to put the Green Bay Packers in there. If they're lingering around, somehow Aaron Rodgers can, like, you know, just make 14 points appear on the board out of nowhere. I don't know who he's throwing to necessarily because they keep running all of his good targets out of town besides Davante Adams. But
and Randall Cobb.
It does. Yeah. Well, I don't count him. He's on and off the team so many times. I don't count him. Jordy Nelson got ran out. But
they have Jimmy G, though.
I mean, yeah. Oh,
the other Jimmy G.
Yeah. Yeah. But would you agree the Packers, if they're in the playoffs, have the potential to win?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I never count on Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. I mean, they were a team that was expected to be in the Super Bowl contention last year. Then Rodgers gets hurt, and good Lord, they had to use Brett Hundley as their quarterback. And I'd like Hundley coming out of UCLA, but man, he looked bad last year. So hopefully Rodgers doesn't get hurt this year because, you know, his offensive line is not as bad as Indy's and Andrew Luck, but they're still not that great. And, I mean, Rodgers' backup now is still Brett Hundley. Then if he ever gets hurt, their backup is
Deshaun
Kizer. Hundley's not there anymore?
I believe they got rid of Hundley for Deshaun Kizer, and I believe the other guy that Joe Callahan might still be on the roster. Is the third one.
Callahan's with the Eagles. I saw him practicing with Wentz and Foles last week. Hundley's still with the Packers. I just looked it up. It's okay. Hundley, and then their backup is Deshaun Kizer, which, well, we saw how well Deshaun Kizer was last year for the Browns. And as a Notre Dame fan, I thought Kizer left college way, way too early.
Mm-hmm.
And even Brian Kelly agreed with me.
His coach said that.
Yeah, Brian Kelly said that.
Which, to be fair, you know, Pete Carroll also said that about Mark Sanchez, and we see how that worked.
Well, it's a perfect example. Sanchez had a decent NFL career, but, I mean, would you say decent? Can we say decent for Mark Sanchez, or do we say it was below average? He did get the two AFC championship games, but those are in his first two years.
I would give him right at average, I guess. I mean, it's nothing to balk at because he did get to, you know, he had those accolades. He was able to start some games. He played for some good franchises. There were people who believed in him. You know, it wasn't, Mark Sanchez is in, so we don't have any chance. It's like, no, he gave you a chance to win a few times. He just, you know, he wasn't going to be a Hall of Famer to start with. He was going to be C+, B- level anyway.
Okay, let me ask you real quick. Will you remember Mark Sanchez for his AFC title runs or the butt fumble?
I knew you were about to say that because up until about 5 seconds ago, I had not even thought about the butt fumble. But now, more than likely, it's 50-50 to me. But I'm kind of weird like that. But most people are going to remember him because of the butt fumble, which honestly was not his fault. But nothing he could do about it.
Yeah, I always remember the butt fumble more than the AFC title games he went to. I'm sorry. I mean, it's just truth. I mean, I liked him and Rex together, but good Lord.
Yeah, it was definitely one of the more entertaining parts of his career. But back to the list. After Green Bay, I got to put Houston in there. I really, really like their quarterback. Their defense is loaded. They've got Whitney Merciless back, who is my favorite defender they have. Nothing personal to J.J. Watt or Clowney or any of those. But Whitney Merciless, to me, when he went down with an injury last year, that's when that defense crumbled. It wasn't any of the other injuries. But I like Houston. So I think, especially in their division, we don't know what Andrew Luck's going to be. We don't know what Marcus Mariota's going to be. Blake Bortles is still in charge of steering the ship in Jacksonville. So Houston is the front runner to run their division.
I would disagree. I think Jacksonville is still the best team in that division. I know everyone I'm not a Bortles guy. Well, I don't think anyone's really a Bortles guy or girl. But I think Jacksonville's still the best. And I think Indy, if Luck stays healthy, will be right there with Houston. I'm with you. Houston's defense is great. J.J. Watt will probably get hurt in the first four games, and he'll be out for the season because unfortunately that's what's happened the last few years with him. Clowney's in a contract year, so expect a big year from him. You're right, Merciless is back. They you got Deshaun Watson back, so you got another year of him and Nuke Hopkins. I like that team. They have talent, and I'm a big Bill O'Brien fan, but I still think Jacksonville is that team. And then, you know, Tennessee, who knows what they're going to be like with Mike Vrabel and Matt LaFleur, their offensive coordinator, said he's going to unleash Marcus Mariota this year. But, I mean, I want to see Mariota grow because I haven't seen anything. I haven't been impressed with him nor Jameis, the two quarterbacks in that draft class. So I want to see one of them do something this year, and it hurts Jameis because he's suspended for the first three games. So I always thought Jameis was the better quarterback anyway. He's more of a pocket quarterback, which he's looked good. He's had good receivers to throw to, either if you're thinking of Vincent Jackson or Mike Evans, so and you know, he's had good tight ends too. He has O.J. Howard to throw the ball to, so I like him over Mariota, but I would still take in that division right now. Probably take Jacksonville, and I'm not on the Blake Bortles. Well, no one, there is no one on the hype train for Blake Bortles or the bandwagon. Yeah. So this is probably Bortles' last year. I could see them getting Eli. I think Eli down there would be great for Jacksonville.
Yeah, I think that. That's going to be a little harder to do because I think the Giants will be better. But, yeah, you could see that. The only thing about Jacksonville, and I don't remember where I heard it, but I looked it up because I wanted to make sure this was facts too. As good and as loaded as Jacksonville is, go back last year and look at every time they played an above-average quarterback. Plus, they got blown out a handful of times. And as good a season as Jacksonville had, do you know how many more wins last year Jacksonville had than the Dallas Cowboys?
Jacksonville had Jacksonville won 11 games, right? Or were they they were 10-6, right?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
And what was Dallas 8-8 or not? Or are they 9-7?
9-7.
Okay, so they had one more win.
Yeah, only one more win, and there was no Mariota because he was hurt and he was up and down. There was no Andrew Luck. He didn't play at all last year. Houston, they didn't have their quarterback, plus half their defense was on the IR. You look, and it was the year for them to suddenly have a 10 or 11 win season and to do really well. And once they got the playoffs, yeah, they can wreck people, but they didn't have enough to get all the way there. So I feel like, as much as I like Jacksonville, I feel like their window is slowly closing, and if they don't do something quick to throw it back open, they may just have a 1 or 2 year run here before they have to start paying the rest of everybody.
As long as they have that defense, they're going to compete. But if they can't get anything out of Blake Bortles, which I don't think they'll get a lot out of Blake Bortles anyway, but they have Leonard Fournette. They have a great running game. And I like Doug Marone as a coach. I think he's doing a nice job with them. But You're right. I think their window – I think they might have a little – their window might be a little bigger than that. I don't think it seemed like a five-year window for them because I just don't – you know, I don't believe in Blake Bortles. I don't think anyone really does. They don't even believe in Blake Bortles. But, I mean, as a first-round talent, the guy looked apart when he played at Central Florida, but – he just hasn't done anything, and even
it's
he got him to the AFC title game last year. What's that?
It's also Central Florida. You know, nothing personal, but it's not a Power Five school, and not saying that you can't be great at non Power Five, but you know, it'd be like none personal, but if Kennesaw had somebody who ran for 3,000 yards, which is a local team out here, they're Division Two. If they ran for 3,000 yards in the season, it's like, yeah, that's great and everything, but you're not top level. So as cool as that is, you know, Blake Bortles having a fantastic year at Central Florida, you know, it's not the SEC, the Big Ten, the Pac-12.
You know, there's I agree with you, but there's two guys that will always hurt that argument is three, if you think about it. Joe Flacco played at Delaware. Ben Roethlisberger played at Miami of Ohio, which is a Division I school, and then you have Carson Wentz, who played at North Dakota State.
And oddly enough, they're still good because Kennesaw was one game away last year in the playoffs of playing against North Dakota State.
And Wentz was incredible when he played there. So that argument's always going to get shot down because as soon as you say you can't, you know, guys who play Division II football aren't going to be any good, then you immediately think of. I know it's Division One.
Well, I'm not saying they're not
going
to be any good. I'm just saying, you know, there's a difference between, you know, there's a difference if Barry Bonds hits 73 home runs in Major League Baseball like he did, or he hits 73 home runs in a men's softball league. You know, it's two different things.
I guess. I mean, softball it's tough, but no, I completely agree. You're right, and
I'm really making enemies today.
Like I said,
I think so.
No, you're all right. I mean, I'm not a Bonds guy, so I don't care.
No, I mean, not necessarily with you, because we always debate all kinds of things anyway, but I feel like the text line is going to blow up in a minute about how I'm only in the Power Five or don't down talk this. I'm like, it is what it is, you know?
Well, I mean, so, when you beat someone, when someone knocks off Alabama, that's a non-Power Five, and then we'll talk about it, but beat a singular good team if you're, you know, you can only play the schedule you have in front of you, but schedule someone good. And that's kind of what, you know, Central Florida needs to do after they claim themselves as the national champions for finishing undefeated, which that was a cute story. It really was. But
yeah.
Alabama would smoke them in a game with Jalen Hurts or with Tua. It doesn't matter who plays quarterback. Alabama would – Nick Saban could play quarterback and they'd still win.
Yeah, there's a good chance me or you could play quarterback and they'd still win.
I'll take Saban over us. Sorry. I mean, I just would. I think Saban can still swing the ball at 860, whatever, 6.
Yeah. Plus, I don't think I have any eligibility left. Pretty sure you don't
either.
Yeah,
I don't. No, I think I used it all when I was in school.
Since you said Jacksonville, would you put if you wouldn't put Houston in the mix, would you put Jacksonville for your side, or you just don't trust Bortles enough?
I would. I think their defense, what's that old motto they always say, defense wins championships, and I think that defense could carry them to a championship. They have so many good players from their line to their linebackers,
And then you have Jalen Ramsey and you have other guys on their defense. Their defense is really talented. Miles Jack, Dante Fowler Jr. They have so many guys. And A.J. Bouye, who people always overlook, he might be better than Jalen Ramsey when it comes to shutting people down. I think they're both really good. And I love Jalen Ramsey trash talking. I think that's great for football, and I just like the way he plays. And he's a nice young player. The whole thing you have at Florida State, where the thing with Texas A&M, and they put a thing up like players he coached, and he said Jimbo never helped me with anything. Like I just love the way Ramsey plays and the way he is on and off the field. So I think Jacksonville's defense can totally carry them to go into the Super Bowl. It's just a matter of, like we said, how far can they go with Blake Bortles? I mean, I don't think he's Trent Dilfer. Like when Dilfer was a quarterback for the 2000 Ravens, I think he's a little better than that. But I mean, is he Joe Flacco? Is he someone that's not Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, Peyton Manning that can lead his team to the Super Bowl?
Right. Yeah. That exactly. Next one up, as far as the alphabetical list, I think the Chargers are going to be fantastic this year. I don't know how many games they're going to win, but I feel like if Phillip Rivers was ever going to have a chance, I know people say this every year, if ever Rivers was going to have a chance to get any kind of hardware outside of a passing title, I think the Chargers this year, if they can just stay healthy. Now, I know Hunter Henry's already down. They're trying to get Antonio Gates to come back after they unceremoniously pretty much threw him out the door. But this Charger team is one of the most talented, loaded one they've had in a long time. They finally got the coach right. They've had the quarterback forever, just never did anything for him. I got to put, if the Chargers make the playoffs, which they were only like a game out of doing last year, if they get in there, they're good enough to beat anybody in the AFC.
I agree. I think Phillip Rivers is always so overlooked, I like their team. Mike Williams is back for them, the receiver that was out of last year. You lose Jason Verrett on your defense, which is, it's kind of unfortunate because you're hoping to have a good year for him, but for the second year in a row, he's out for the year before the season even starts. They have some nice playmakers on their team. You're hoping for another good year from Melvin Gordon III, and just I just want to see how Phillip Rivers does with the young receivers, because he had a great year last year, and you're right, they were right there, and that division is the division is tough because you don't know what you're going to get from Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes. Who knows about the Raiders with John Gruden, because they can't get Khalil Mack on the field. There's so much stuff surrounding him. And then Denver with Case Keenum, how well is he going to play in that offense? Will Vance Joseph make it through the season? There's so much surrounding them right now, but I really like that, the idea of Phillip Rivers throwing the ball to Keenan Allen and Mike Williams and all the other guys they have there. So I really like this Chargers offense. They have a lot of good playmakers, and I think Anthony Lynn, you're right, I think Anthony Lynn is the right coach for that team.
Yeah, and like I agree that until we know what Mahomes is going to be, you just have to pencil them in as just a question mark that they're either going to be, they're either going to be towards the top of the division, or they're just going to kind of flutter into that gray area of the middle of the pack. But all the rest of the teams, I think, have their own set of issues. I don't think Denver's solved a whole lot of theirs. Like you said, it's just the way that division is lining up, this is the Chargers' best shot they're going to have for a little while, because these other teams aren't going to be bad that much longer.
I agree. And how much you have left in Phillip Rivers? I mean, Rivers, the only time Rivers really got far was that year that he tore his ACL and still played against the Patriots, because Lowe always talks about that game, because Lowe was on the team where LT got hurt in that game. And it was just that was like the best team they had. The best Chargers team they've had was that 14-2 team that didn't, I think it was that year, that didn't win the Super Bowl. That team was so good under Marty Schottenheimer. Then they ran Marty out, they brought Norv Turner in.
Yeah,
they brought Norv in, and they didn't really do anything. And then, Lowe left and LT left. And, Rivers, I've always liked Rivers' enthusiasm, the way he plays, his passion, his bolo ties after games, like his 400 kids, the commute up from San Diego. Like, I just like the way Rivers plays. And, he's always going to be up there with when you think of him, you're obviously going to think of Roethlisberger and Eli Manning because of that draft class. So it'll be interesting to see how he does this year, because he's the only guy left out of those three guys that's ever even made the Super Bowl. So I'm hoping he does it, even though I'd like to see a team like Oakland get there, just because it's, for me, it's the Bay Area. But I don't know how they're going to do under Gruden. You're hoping Derek Carr, takes a step forward instead of taking another step back like he did last year. But I think San Diego, LA is the team to beat right now in that division.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of LA, the Rams are a question mark to me. I think they've loaded up too much. I'm not going to say too much talent, but there's too many egos in that locker room that I think it could combust if they can't keep them contained like that. And I feel like, you know, it's not going to be too long into the season for Ndamukong Suh steps on Aaron Rodgers again and gets suspended. I guess sidebar, besides a 12-yard scramble that Mayfield just had, he just threw a touchdown pass. So there's something else to look forward to, Browns fans. But no joke, Baker Mayfield next to all these other guys in front of him, and I'm not talking about just linemen. He looks like somebody's eighth grade kid wandered onto the field and they gave him a helmet. He is like a third of the size of even the running back. But like I said, back to the Rams, I think there's too many egos that they're going to get in each other's way. But if they don't get in each other's way, this team is just loaded enough to where they're a matchup nightmare for everybody.
I agree. I want to see if Jared Goff takes another step forward in the second year under Sean McVay. I think that's like the biggest question mark. That and when will Aaron Donald get back on the field? It's kind of like Khalil Mack. You know, I don't know if they need him as much as the Raiders need Khalil Mack, because they do have Ndamukong Suh now. You got Jason Peters back there, Marcus Peters back there in the secondary. You have Akeem Talib. You have LaMarcus Joyner. They have so many guys that they went out and got. They signed Brandon Cooks to that big deal. That team is loaded offensively. They signed Todd Gurley. They have a good line. They have a great head coach. I think that team is going to run away. I'm getting text messages sent in the background. I just think that they're going to be. It was actually the one from you. But the way this my thing is set up with my computer and my microphone, for some reason with my Mac, I just got a new one. Everything, if a text message comes through on the computer, comes through my through my computer and microphone.
You.
So it's weird. But yeah, I think the Rams are the team to be in the division, and then you can look at the other teams. I think the 49ers probably finish second. Seattle takes a step back, and then Arizona's Arizona, and we'll see how Josh Rosen does. But yeah, if Goff takes a step forward again, I think they're the team. They could be the team from the NFC that goes to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and just to show everybody how important the preseason is, the producer in the room has changed it off of the Browns-Giants game. We're now watching Impact Wrestling. So I guess thumbs up to the producer. Just know that we're either going to run two TVs in a minute, or we'll have to decide what to watch once I can actually reach the remote. But
is D'Angelo Williams wrestling? Isn't he with Impact?
He shows up like once every 6 months, which I mean if you ask Panther fans, that was about right anyway. So as much as I like D'Angelo Williams, no, he shows up because he's friends with Moose, who the former Atlanta Falcon, I think he was a former Cowboy too. Moose that wrestles over there for them. He shows up and he's kind of like his muscle ever so often, but he doesn't. The one match he had was pretty decent, except for when he jumped off the top rope and almost killed himself. Past that, he's not a bad wrestler. He's not great.
Okay, yeah, I remember he signed with Impact, and
yeah.
I know he was in the media rounds before, and I thought he was going to end up getting in the media. I remember he went out with Kyle Brandt and Peter Schrager of the NFL Network on Good Morning Football the one day that morning. Sorry, I'm looking, for some odd reason, checking the box score on the Bears-Bengals game, because I saw it's 14-14. Nothing to report there.
Yep.
Besides, quickly, did you see the Chase Daniel thing yesterday where he had Trubisky sign his jersey for him? Did you see that?
I haven't seen it, but I heard a story, and that is hilarious.
Yeah, it's really good. Check it out. I think ESPN had it on Instagram. It's really funny.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out, because anytime that a player trolls or pulls a good rib, to use the good wrestling term there, pulls a good prank on somebody, it's always worth it.
Oh, completely agree.
We're going to run through the rest of this list because we are running out of time on the show. We're up to the Rams. I don't know if you like Minnesota. I don't like them enough to win the Super Bowl. I think their best chance was last year, and they just completely just crapped the bed right there at the end and blew it.
I actually think they're better now because they have a better quarterback.
They do.
I think with Cousins, that'll make them a little bit better. Well, actually a lot better. You're going to get Dalvin Cook back because he was out after week 4 last year. still have that defense. I think Zimmer is such an underrated coach. I like what they do, but I, like I said, I think the Rams are going to be the team from the NFC that goes to the Super Bowl. You're hoping if Goff takes that step. It's all going to ride on Jared Goff. If Goff, you know, goes back to being Jared Goff his first year, then it's clearly going to be Minnesota. But I like Minnesota this year. I think they win that division still. But Super Bowl, I think it might be them and the Rams in the NFC title game.
That would be pretty interesting. I've only got two more teams that I would add to the make the playoffs. They have a legitimate chance to win a Super Bowl. And that's the defending champion Philadelphia Eagles, because it's not that they lost a whole lot and all they did was beef up a couple other things like an offensive and defensive line, and the Pittsburgh Steelers, who you can kind of pencil in as the 1 or 2 seed in the AFC this year.
Well, I agree with you. When Philadelphia is going to be there again, Carson Wentz will be back. Hopefully, he has a big year. I'm a big Wentz guy. They're like you said, they're Super Bowl champions. They'll be there. I don't think they'll win the Super Bowl again this year. As I said, I think it's going to be the Vikings and Rams in the NFC title game. I think this is the year for Pittsburgh finally. I think this is the year they finally get back to the Super Bowl. I'm not trying to play bias as a guy from Pittsburgh. I'm not a huge Steeler fan. I mean, I will root for them. They come here to play Oakland in December. I will be at that game. But I think with Roethlisberger and AB and, you know, I think with them, it's all going to come down to their defense and what you get out of Le'Veon Bell. Is he going to play motivated because he doesn't have that new contract? But I think that they have enough talent still on that team, even though they lost Martavis Bryant to the Raiders. I think they still have enough talent. You know, they're moving into a new offensive coordinator, but they're still going to put up 25, 30 points a game. You know, their defense will be their defense. They'll probably be a little shaky because they have in the last few years. But I think this is the year they finally get back to the Super Bowl. They have too much talent not to get to the Super Bowl. And Roethlisberger's window is closing. He's 36 years old. So I think that, you know, this is their year, hopefully, because, like I said, I'm not going to always root for the Steelers, even though I'm from Pittsburgh, but I'd like to see them in the Super Bowl. And just anyone besides New England. I'm just tired of seeing New England, and I love Brady. Don't get me wrong, and I love Belichick as a coach. I'm not a Patriots guy, but, I mean, they're just so damn good. I'm tired of seeing them in the Super Bowl every year. And I guess you could argue that the Steelers are always in the Super Bowl, too, if it's not the Patriots.
Well, I mean, it's the same thing we said about baseball. Is it's fun when these other markets are making it in, because it's nice in baseball that you don't see the same 3 or 4 teams all the time, because you really don't, for the most part. I mean, you could say the Giants, because every other year there for 6 years they won, but – even then, they were a new market. They're somebody we hadn't seen in a while. So, yeah, it would be nice. It wouldn't hurt my feelings. As much as I'm a Brady homer, it wouldn't hurt my feelings if the Patriots didn't make it to one, because, like you said, that means it would be a Pittsburgh. It could be the Chargers. You know, it could be any of these other teams that could make it in like that. I know we both need to go, but I have got – basically, this is called Who Wins More? And I've got 3 different scenarios. We can make real quick answers here, and then we can get on our merry way. Are you ready?
I'm ready to go.
Okay. Who has more wins this year? Atlanta, San Francisco, Dallas, or Green Bay? Basically, the 4 teams we represent between the 4 hosts.
Green Bay.
I'm with you on that one. I think they're going to win 11 or 12 games. The Falcons are going to win 9 or 10. And Dallas will be 9 or 10, and San Francisco is anywhere between 5 to 10.
I'd say 9 or 7 and 9 or 8 and 8. The people, there's,
that makes sense.
I think a lot of people are overrating them this year. They're taking the right steps, but the people saying 9 and 7, 10 and 6, that's a little childish right now to me.
They're not ready for that. No, not yet. Not with that schedule.
No, they're the second year. They're like an expansion team. They're in the second year because they completely rebuilt the roster. Give Lynch and Shanahan another year. I think next year is where they take the big step.
Exactly. So we agree on that. Who wins more games, the 49ers or the Oakland Raiders?
I would, for that one, I'm going to take San Francisco. I just don't think the Raiders have enough defensively in that division. I mean, if you're
their potential to be a train wreck this year. I mean, when your brand new head coach comes in with all the allure and all the big things going, and yeah, I'm a big fan of the head coach. She's probably one of my favorite coaches, but he said no more than 5 or 6 words to the face of the team, the best defensive player, probably arguably the best player on your roster, and he hasn't talked to him, let alone talk contract. It just sounds like a train wreck with a meteor going to hit the train at the same time all at once.
Yeah, and you know that's going to be an X factor. What happens with Khalil Mack and you know and how that defense plays, because I think that's their weak point. But the Niners' defense isn't very good either. I mean, they have you got DeForest Buckner, and I heard someone today. I think it was Andy Benoit from SI say that he thinks that DeForest Buckner could win Defensive Player of the Year. And I'm just like, come on, man. He had 3 sacks last year. I mean, let's pump the brakes a little bit. I mean, I like him. I like some of their young pass rushers, but I mean, their defense is still growing, and you know, like I said, another year for them. But I think that they'll probably end up with a better record. Like I said, 8-8, 9-7. I think the Raiders will probably be around 7-9, 8-8. We'll see. I was going to say push, where they're both. I think they'd have the same record, but I'm going to take the Niners in that one.
Yep, I definitely agree there. And oddly enough, I didn't realize that all 3 of these pertain to you guys out in the Bay Area there. So feel free to use these if you guys need to debate anything in the next few days. And then lastly, who has more wins this year, John Gruden or Jay Gruden?
John.
You think?
That it's tough because I like Jay and I like what he's going to do with Alex Smith. But, I mean, the Giants are going to be better. The Eagles are the Eagles. And you have the Cowboys. I think the Redskins probably win 7 games. They were 7-8-1 last year. They'll probably be 7-9 again. And I think the Raiders, if they can go 8-8, maybe 9-7. Because I think that, like I said, that division's so up in the air because you don't know what you're going to get from Case Keenum and the Broncos. You don't know what you're going to get from Mahomes. Although the people are on that Mahomes hype train. I like him. He can throw the ball deep, and he looks good. But, I mean, let's pump the brakes on him a little bit. It's kind of like Jimmy G. Let's just pump the brakes. Because Mahomes only played 1 game, and he won that game last year, but it was a meaningless game. But, yeah, I think John wins more games. And I don't think Jay makes it. I think this is probably Jay's last year in Washington if they don't win. I think they're going to fire him, and unfortunately. Then I'd love to see him come here and be John's offensive coordinator.
I don't know. I don't know if they'd work together, but I know they could, but I don't know that they would, because I feel like he would want to be a head coach again. But, you know, real quickly, if you think about John Harbaugh is in the same scenario. If Baltimore doesn't win at least probably 7 or 8 games, he's probably unemployed. So maybe Jay and John swap teams there, and that could be your new head coach just going into next year.
Well, and they don't have to go very far. I mean, you know, Baltimore and D.C. are pretty close. I actually have one for you quickly. Who wins more games, the Bucks or the Browns?
The Bucks or the Browns? When you say,
I think Cleveland.
Yeah, I was about to say I'm going to have to go with the Browns because I think we're finally seeing where Jameis Winston's hype train is going to go, and it is going into the lower levels of the local subway, I guess. His off the field is going to kill his career. It's already doing it now. So I think the Bucks and their organization that is still kind of a mess. It's an argument I'll bring up next time around about how culture can help or hurt a superstar player. Tampa Bay's too much of a mess all the way from top to bottom of that place. So give me the Browns, who could easily win 5 or 6 games, which is 5,000% better than last year.
Yeah, I mean, when Hugh Jackson's 1-31 as the head coach of the Browns, I'm with you. I think they could win 5 games. I think with Tyrod Taylor, it's going to help. And, you know, the story out there, the Baker might sit the entire season, which that's hogwash or poppycock.
Yeah.
Is. We didn't get to Mike Socha today. But we'll get to him eventually.
No.
I mean, I went on a great rant about him. But, I think the Browns will win more games. And I think either way, we can see a scenario where both of their coaches are fired. I think Hugh Jackson might be out. And I think that Dirk Cutter is probably done in Tampa Bay after this year, and they'll bring someone else in, because it's Tampa Bay. They fire coaches all the time. Well, I mean, so does Cleveland. So really no difference there. The best theory I heard was, see what you think of this real quick. Clay Travis from Fox Sports Radio was talking about the Haslam family, and they're huge on Urban Meyer. And they wanted Greg Schiano to coach Tennessee. And if he said, what about this? What if Urban gets fired from Ohio State? The Browns are terrible this year. They fire Hugh Jackson, and they bring in Urban Meyer to be the new head coach of the Browns next year. What do you think of that?
I think there's about a 2% chance that happens. Ohio State's not going to fire him. But, no, in that dream scenario, I don't know that the way Urban coaches, I think he's a lot like Chip Kelly. Very, very smart, very, very educated, knows what works and what doesn't. I just don't know how he would do in the pros. I feel like college, it's like Nick Saban. They're just those kind of guys and those kinds of systems, and they have the college thing figured out. So why would you, you know, if you're the best of the best at your job in your area, why would you want to try to test any other water? Just keep being the best.
I mean, Harbaugh and Pete Carroll are like probably could be the exceptions because they were both really good in college and they had nice runs in the NFL. I mean, Harbaugh never had a losing season, and you know Pete Carroll. He's won a Super Bowl and lost at another one. So, but you're right. I could see him being more of like a Chip Kelly, a Nick Saban, a Steve Spurrier kind of guy.
Yeah.
But I mean, that would put butts in the seats at the dog pound in Cleveland if that really did happen, because.
Oh,
how
yeah.
often are you going to say
people
would go see a coach, but that would happen. It's kind of like Oakland. A lot of people are going to go to games. Raider Nation, they always show
sure.
up, and you know they have a great fan base, and the Coliseum's always packed. But that game's always going to sell out now because Gruden's there. So
right.
I could see it being kind of the same thing, although I don't think Urban Meyer's anywhere near has the aura around him, and especially because obviously college and NFL are different, but nothing's going to be like Gruden being back in the NFL. It's going to be a a bleep show every week where no matter where Gruden goes, people are always going to be wanting to see Gruden and what he's doing. And it's going to be a good, I think this is a great thing for the NFL that he's back.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, real quickly, if Urban Meyer did get fired, he's not, he's at absolute worst. He'll get suspended a handful of games because I think he does know more than he's telling us, but he has a history for ignoring stuff like this. And so it finally caught up to him. If they do fire him outside of, you know, Alabama, Georgia, and a couple other ones, how many other top tier programs, we're talking top 20 programs, would instantly fire their coach to hire Urban Meyer? Probably, 70% of them? And we're talking Texas, we're talking Nebraska, we're talking any of those like that are, you know, outside of probably Miami, outside of Georgia, outside of Alabama, a few of the ones that are on top right now, the ones that are trying to get back in, probably 70-80% of them would fire their coach right now for Urban Meyer.
I see some teams doing it. I don't think Texas will. I think they like Todd Herman a lot. He did a nice job with Houston. And I think it's the same thing with Nebraska. This is their first year with Scott Frost, who was on that team when they won the national title. I believe he was their quarterback. I don't think they're going to fire Scott Frost year one. But I think Urban will, if he gets fired, he'll have another job. I mean, he could do the whole thing like he did with Florida, where he takes a year off and comes back. If this is a case where Urban does get fired for this happening, how big of a bullet did Penn State dodge by not hiring him? Because remember, he was in contention for that job and ended up giving it to Bill O'Brien. I mean,
wow.
To go from the whole Paterno thing to now this happening, if this happened to Penn State, I mean, that would just destroy that program more than nothing's ever going to come close to the Sandusky thing. And I lived there and I was working in the media when that happened. Nothing will ever compare to that. But my God, they dodged a major bullet if something happens with Urban there. And, you know, Bill O'Brien was a great coach for them to bring him back. And then now they have James Franklin. So, but you're right. I think that he'll be back. I don't know what team would look at him. It might be a smaller school, which, you know, he started at Utah. Utah was a school that he kind of put him on the map with Alex Smith, but there will be a team that'll want him. He's still a good coach. He's still relatively young, but you know, this thing will, I think it's going to be wrapped up in the next week and a half, and then we'll see what happens.
Exactly. But, we're out of time. So, as always, appreciate you, being a part of the show here, Cody. We got in some good discussions. As always, we left a lot more on the table and a lot more on the sheet, so that gives us more stuff to talk about next time.
Completely agree, and maybe I'll go on my social rant next week.
Definitely so, because I did have a topic that involved him, but we will get to that next week, as always. Definitely, if you get a chance, listen to Baseball, which is a podcast that Cody is a part of, and co-host that one with... I have the name in front of me. There you go. They do a great job. They talk a lot of similar stuff that we do here, but they get more in depth about it, especially Bay Area sports and all. But for the coach, for Reggie, for Cody, I'm Jeremy. We'll see you guys next week. Yeah, you should probably watch wrestling. Don't watch this game. It's not good anymore. But we'll see you guys next week. Go Falcons.
Was that not clear without the bam? Yeah, okay. Bam! What?